The difference between false memories and true memories is the same as for jewels. It is not always the false ones that look the most real and the most brilliant. This is Dr. Herbert L. Byerly, Dean of the University of Healing here in Campo, California, bringing you instant illustration, instant illumination, instant.
Oh, yeah, thank you.
What are we doing? Instant what?
Bye-bye.
Inspiration.
Inspiration. Instant inspiration, instant illumination, instant good stuff. Okay. The difference between false memories and true memories is the same as for jewels. It is always the false ones that look the most real and the most brilliant. Salvador Dali is quite an interesting painter. And now what kind of painting did he do?
Surrealistic.
And what kind of painting did he do?
Abstract.
And was he good?
Well, people liked.
People paid a lot for him.
All right. If money is any criteria, he was good. Now, let's look at another one. We have Michelangelo. Now, how much did he get for doing an inside paint job on the Sistine Chapel? He painted the entire inside roof of the Sistine Chapel, and I'm sure it wasn't any great amount of money. We're going to talk to Danny, if we can get him to, Danny, about painting the barn. And he doesn't know about that. We've already got the paint here ready for it. So he can be a Salvador Dali, or he can be a, a Michelangelo, or he can be a Hitler. As you know, Hitler was a house painter before he went into politics.
Oh, no, I didn't.
You are a painter?
I don't want
evidence. Well, great. We've got paint and we've got things to paint.
If I haven't done it, I'll try it.
Well, that's good, too. Okay. The difference between false memories and true memories is the same as for jewels. False jewels are usually made so perfectly, you can't tell the difference. You look at women who carry these big jewels on their fingers, and you think to yourself, how ostentatious. Well, actually, it's just easier to make a big false jewel than it is to make a small false jewel. And when my wife and I got married, we went to the jewelry store to pick out the diamond engagement ring, you know. And as we picked out the diamond engagement ring, woo-wee, what prices they had on those things, you know. And when you could see the diamond, you were in several hundred dollars already. And when you could see the diamond, it was cheaper, but it still was expensive. And so we got this nice ring for her. But the first ring was the most wonderful ring that she ever had. I had, you know what Cracker Jack is? Cracker Jack is where there's always a little prize inside of the popcorn thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And so I had found a ring in it one time. And I put it in my collection of things that
souvenirs.
I traded, souvenirs and what have you. And so when I found Faith, I said, would you marry me, you know? And she says, yes, you know. And so I gave her the Cracker Jack ring. That's what all I had. And that's all I could certainly afford at that time because I was on the GI Bill going to college and I just didn't have a lot of moolah. So I gave it to her. And it was a beautiful little ring. It looked really nice. It was, you know, it looked very real. And so she put it on, had it on, went home, and showed it to her father. Look what Herb gave me. Look what Herb. And her father was blind. And he didn't hear this, the look what Herb gave me. He only heard Herb did something, you know, that made his daughter cry. And he instantly got on the phone. He said, I don't ever want to see you again. I don't ever want you to see my daughter again. And finally, Faith, you know, calmed him down and told him what the story was, you know. I just gave her a ring, you know. And I didn't give her a baby or something like that. I just gave her a ring. So it was okay. But it's quite a way to start a relationship, you know. But the ring was very real looking. It was very inexpensive, obviously. It was Cracker Jack, you know. And I'm sure if she would wear it very long, what would happen to her finger?
It'd turn green.
It'd turn black.
Turn green. black? What's the difference between black and green and a ring?
Whatever.
Different metal?
Was it a metal ring?
Yeah, it was like metal, like tin, you know.
Yeah, it turned green.
It turned green, yeah.
Green, black.
Mm-hmm, yeah. But she didn't. She lost it somewhere. She lost it somewhere. After she got the real engagement ring, it wasn't important to have this. But I would have said that the first one was the most important one in the world. You know, how many times do you get engaged, really, and be given something like that? You know, that's really, really very special. So the difference between false memories and real memories is the same as with jewels, you know. The false ones seem just as real. Now, when you tell someone about your trip to Yosemite, you tell them everything that the guide told you. You tell them everything that the neighbors in other tents and other campsites told you. And you make it sound like you did all those things yourself. You climbed up the big mountain. You shinnied up and down. You ate outside. You had mosquitoes. You had the tent. You had this and that. And you didn't have any of those things. But you were there, and others around you were having them, so you claimed them for yours. You see, the difference between false memories and true ones is the same as with jewels. You make the false memories so beautiful. Now, what was the real memory of going to Yosemite? The real memory was that you loved the waterfall. You loved seeing how clear the rivers were. You loved the big grass meadows. You loved seeing the bear. You loved seeing the deer and the other animals that were around. And that's the real memory. But it's not interesting to tell the real memory to people because that's what everybody experiences when they go up there. They don't experience all these things that the other people are talking about. And the other people probably didn't experience it either. They're making it up because they wanted to have their adventure be a little more adventuresome. As the mother says, "Well, what did you and your dad do this afternoon?" "Oh, we went out and fought tigers and lions and we rode on elephants." And the mother says, "Oh, come on now, you know. Oh, Mom, we did. And where was this?" "At the circus." "Oh." Yeah, totally unreasonable, illogical, wrong, but at the circus? Okay, I can conceive that you might have done that because they do give elephant rides at the circus and you do pretend you're fighting tigers and lions as they're behind the cage, say, "Rawr, rawr, rawr," you know, and just having a good time. But you see, the false and the real oftentimes get confused. And this is how it is with friendships, too. We sometimes think that we are making a friendship because we are so wonderful that we're so desirable. We think we have a friendship because we have done so many nice things for them or they're doing nice things for us. And this is false, false, false. Friendships come when you like yourself and do whatever pleases you, and somebody else likes to go along with you doing what pleases them, which is similar to what pleases you. Really, that's what it is. Do you want to go fishing with someone who doesn't want to fish? You know, what fun is that? Do you want to go camping or hiking with someone who hates camping and hiking, like most women, you know? You know, no way. It's no fun. Yeah. My wife.
She'd have a cabin or a shower. Or,
hey, cool. You knew what she had to have. And you provided it.
No.
Or didn't go. Yeah. No, my wife was always saying to me that she didn't have time to get everything ready, get all the food ready and get everything ready. And so I took care of them. I got everything ready, put it in the car, all the bedding, all the sleeping bags and the air mattresses and the food and the clothing that we wanted. And I came home from work. You know, it was all set before. And I came home from work and I said, "Okay, Mark, get in the car." And then I went up and I said, "Faith, we're going to take a trip. We're going to go to Yosemite or we're going to wherever we were going, Merced River." And she said, "But I don't have anything ready. It takes time." I said, "Do you want to go?" "I'd love to go." "Well, come on, get in the car. Everything's ready." No, she couldn't say no. But she always had a good time. She always had a good time when we went out there because it was always so beautiful. And we made friends with all the other campers. We made friends with everybody on the campground, and we were just like the center of a lot of wonderful activity. And the nice thing about being friendly with other people, aside from it being nice, is they want to come over and share their goodies with you. we were at a place, I think it's called Deer Park in Monterey, and we were camping there just having a lovely time overlooking the ocean. And then during the day, we'd drive down to the Monterey Park and beach, and we'd go, you know, bumming around down there, and we'd meet the people who we met up in the campsite. And so as we were doing this, we talked to them, and we were friendly and so forth. And so we were making dinner one evening with corn rolled up in the aluminum foil and fish, beautiful trout that we got rolled up in aluminum foil. And the people at the other campsite, they came over, and they said, "Do you like abalone?" "Ooh, yes," you know. And we said, "Yes." And they said, "Well, here." And they had a whole box of them already made, already cooked. You know, they'd been cooking them. And they were just lovely. And they gave them to us. And wow, we almost didn't eat the trout. But it was so good. But you see, now I'm telling you these things probably a little more imaginative than they really happened. You say, well, how could you tell it more imaginative than they really happened? Well, because we saw other people sitting around eating abalone, and our mouth was watering, you know. And we would talk to different people, and then we'd go back to our campsite and ready to eat our fish and our corn, you know, which was pretty nice. But when you see the abalone and you smell it, and they had pounded it and made it so tender and so lovely. So then they brought it to us. They really did. They did bring it to us, but it was first in our consciousness. First, we had a great desire for it, and then we realized, well, we don't have it, so release it. And then it came. But it's when you tell a story that way, it doesn't make it as much as interesting as when you tell it that here you made friends with these people, and then they came over and shared their largesse with you and things like that. It makes it much more fascinating. But the difference between false things and real things, the false things usually are much more charming. The stories that your children, if you don't have any children, I'm sorry, but the stories of your children are much more charming when they are fanciful than when they are real. And so little boys come running home. "There's a million people out there chasing me. You know, everybody's after me." And Papa goes to the door, and he sees one or two of his buddies out there. "Are you guys chasing him?" "No, we just all came home together, you know." But it's the story. It's fascinating to get the Papa out of the chair to go look at the door and see what's going on. And you have all sorts of fine things. But you see, the fanciful is more the real than the real. Because the fanciful is what goes through our thoughts and our mind whenever we think of these things. And again, a false jewel, Ellen, oh my goodness sakes. Ellen has an aunt who has since gone on to her rewards without her rewards. She was a very rich babe. Tante Lisa, just rich as sin, if rich can be sinful. And she had everything. She had fur coats. She had diamonds and rings and all those things. And her house was filled with silverware. And I mean, she was just a Mönchengladbach, was it? Or in Mönchengladbach in Germany. And she had everything. You know, I don't know. She must have been doing things during the war. But anyhow, she had all this stuff. And then when she was out with Ellen, and they were in a restaurant or something, and Ellen says, "Oh, your jewels are so beautiful." And she says, "That's paste. The real stuff is in the safe. The real stuff is home, locked up. You know, I don't wear the real stuff. This is just paste. This is just pretend." And it looks so real. And this is what people do. I mean, why have beautiful things if you can't wear it? And people say to me about my sports cars, they say, "You treat those sports cars like trucks." Well, my sports cars can do anything, as you know. And sometimes they have a problem, but most of the time they do just fine. And my Mercedes 450 SL, I drove that everywhere and did everything with it. And my Lincoln Continental convertible, put the top back, and I wanted to move my desk from one office to another. I just put it right in the back of the car that was sticking out on each side. You say, "What a way to treat a Lincoln." I say, "Hey, it's my car. It does everything for me." and it's what I love. I love convertibles, you know. And they said, wow. And I said, I notice you don't have one. I'd love to have it, but, you know, it can't do everything we want to do. That's right. Because you're afraid to do something. And I always go back to the Stalders and their Jaguar, remember? And they had a beautiful Jaguar. But this was in Switzerland. And so they only drove it in the summertime when the weather was nice, when the weather wouldn't bother the beautiful Jaguar. But one day, his son came home and wanted to get his motorbike out from in front of the Jag. So he backed up the Jag and got the motorbike out. And meanwhile, Papa comes around the corner and presses the button to open the garage door. And the big concrete weight that was there went right down on top of the Jaguar and squished it right in half. And needless to say, he cried. But that was tough, you know, that was tough. Here, he's been protecting that car to use in nice weather, protecting that car to have fun with it. Otherwise, he drove a big old four-door Chevy, you know, it was a few years older. But he was protecting it, and in the protection, he got no use out of it. But we do this. We do this. We're afraid. The real car, that Chevy, went everywhere, did everything. Everybody rode in it, piled in it. Nobody had to worry about getting footprints or snow or dirt all over it. He didn't care. It made no difference. And it was a fun time to be around. That was the Jaguar, really. That was the beauty car. And then the Jaguar, oh, clean your feet off, take your shoes off, put on some shoe socks and stuff like that. And that's no fun to live like that. But this is what we sometimes do. Yeah, yeah. Now, we have a friend called Dorothea. She's 86. She's going to come up tomorrow and visit. And she has a Jeep, a red Jeep. And you can be sure that anything goes. You get in that Jeep with dirty shoes or dirty clothes or clean shoes or clean shoes or whatever you got on, it doesn't make any difference. And if you're not careful, you're going to get sticky sitting on the seat. Because she delivers to the elderly. She delivers to the elderly and the homebound day-old sweet rolls. And they sometimes fall off on the seat. And the sugared jelly and stuff goes out on the seat and you sit down. Eh, you know. So you have to. She doesn't care. She doesn't care. Oh, I'm sorry. It's too bad, you know. But as she didn't tell you ahead of time, I just had a load of donuts laying on the seat there, and somebody sat on it, or whatever. But, you see, the real is oftentimes never seen. And the unreal, the false, that's what our whole life is made up with. And if we can start realizing that the real is worthwhile going after, Sylvia, who is the real you?
The divine in me.
Ellen, what does the real in you do?
Everything.
Thank you. Heinz, if you were to say the real in you was something, what would you say it is? Your original something or other?
Your archetypal self.
Thank you, Ingeborg. And Daniel, if you were to say that there was a quality within you that was absolutely fantastic, what would you say that quality was?
Being me.
Being you. That's right. That's exactly right. And you, what would you say that the quality within you is if you're returning to it?
Liking me, myself.
Guts and dunks. Returning, gotcha. Return to your original purity and integrity. You're returning to your, I offered the lead to you all, returning to your original purity and integrity. You see, listen to that. You return in awareness to your original purity and integrity, which means you like yourself, which means you're whole and perfect, which means you're wonderful, which means you're great, which means everything is in divine order. But you see, when you have to get in there and give your own opinion, which is okay, it falls short of what I'm asking for. Because I'm asking for the phrases that we're used to using. And the reason that I ask for the phrases that we're used to using is that it gives you an opportunity to use them. And then when you go away from here, be as creative as you like. But this is a school. See, the sign says you are in school. And this is a school, and you're here to learn these creative ideas and have them become part of yourself. And when you leave here, you can interpret them or speak them in any way you like, but you'll find that you'll come back to them, because what you have learned here as creative ideas, I live in my...
ideas, spirit, mind, and body.
Yes, I am...
whole and perfect.
See how it comes? It comes so perfect. I'm whole and perfect. I live in my ideal, spirit, mind, and body. Why do you say ideal?
Because it doesn't define anything.
That's
ideal,
right.
It's open.
It's
unlimited.
It goes back to the original purity and integrity. Mm-hmm. And these are things that we're working on, and these are things that we want to exemplify in our life and live. And it has nothing to do with religion. It has nothing to do with one man's opinion. It's a universal philosophy. Man, know yourself. And that's beautiful. And that's what we teach. Okay. Mr. Salvador Dali, the difference between false memories and true ones is the same as for jewels. It's always the false one that looks the most real and the most brilliant. And on an interesting note, I'll end this. We had a very dear friend who was our student for many, many, many years, a very competent, capable, fantastic lady. And one time she had her breast out. And she says, "Which is the real one?" as she was showing them. And I had no idea, because they both looked exactly alike. Obviously, she had had cosmetic surgery on one of her breasts. Yes. Yeah, you're cosmic. That's where you're staying, yeah. And it was hard to tell. That was Ilsa. You would never know. And I was very surprised, because I had no idea that she had had any work done like that. But apparently, at some point in time, she did. And she says, "Which one's real?" And I thought to myself, doesn't matter. I would choose the pretty one to be real, but now, which one's pretty? Which one is a more ideal? Which one is this? Well, I'm not much of a judge of women's breasts, although I'm sure that they're quite nice. And I just like to be me. And so, remember, which one is real? Is it the Tanta Lisa jewels of a woman who's exceedingly wealthy, and you would think that she'd have her real jewels on?
Oh, yeah.
Or was it Mabel, who only had a couple of jewels, and they were very nice, and she treasured them, and she wore them all the time, and they were real? You never know. So treat everything with a great deal of discrimination, thinking your first thought, and your first thought is,
I like me.
Again.
I like me.
Again.
I like me.
Again.
I like me.
And on that note, I will say, I like me, I like you, I like everybody, and I love you, I love you, I love you.